This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here, White House, Tennessee. Our closer, Jets Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Jack Collins is going to join us a little bit later on in this hour, talk all things World Cup. Then we got some Wimbledon to catch up with Zachary Cohen. And, of course, the king of Connecticut, Will Hill, with all of his plays that he has on the day as well. But just about an hour from now, we're going to get a winner finally here at the Travelers Championship for a Monday finish. That's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Heard some of those Ryder Cup type chants out there. The Norwegians pulling for their guy, the European and Victor Hovland, and then the USA chance for our guy, Scottie Scheffler, world number one. They're going to do battle. They're going to re-tee it up on 18th hole. That's going to be in about 59 minutes from now here for a restart after we had some weather coming to the area yesterday. Kind of delayed that fourth round. Then, of course, the sun's going down, Jensen. Scottie Scheffler makes a par putt to force this playoff. I don't know how many people can get off work here and be back up there, but you are allowed readmission here if you had a ticket for the fourth round to watch the culmination today of world number one against Victor Hovland.
Yep, indeed. Bring your own adult beverages. No one going to be working there to give anyone some food or anything like that. We're done with the amenities portion of this tournament. Also done betting a couple of guys in placement markets. They just find ways to be able to leave us at the altar, if you will. However, really thought Colin Morikawa was going to be in this thing all the way to the end with the 61 that he had in the final round. What a finish for Colin there. And boy, does he look like he's all the way back now from the back injury. But anxious to see. We cash a top five placement market on Scottie Scheffler. What will the approach? How aggressive will these guys be right off the tee? Dave was part of the handicap I asked you about, knowing the amount of weather and rain they got yesterday. Where do you think the psyche will be for both these guys knowing they want to try and end it right here on this first playoff?
I would think Scottie at $1.45 betting favorite feels like the right price point here to me this morning, because I feel like he feels like he might have got away with one. Did not play well after the restart yesterday, made three par putts of length just to force this. So I think he's going to be raring to go to get back in that winner circle for the second time this year. And speaking of placement markets, did nail my two to watch again this week here. Pays to watch. VSiN by the Books, J.J. Spahn, beautiful Sunday, and Russell Henley, big Sunday as well. Cash those top 20 tickets that we gave out here in the program last week. How about some World Cup? We're into the knockout stage here. Canada gets it done late yesterday to move on. Jensen, we know there are some liabilities from our buddy Thomas Gable there at the Borgata. What are we looking for today and beyond?
Yeah, it's interesting. And again, shout out TG tuning us in on his way to work, as always, catching up with him on Fridays and just exchanging a few texts with him now that we are officially into the knockout round. He did say that the United States is a small loser for them at the Borgata, but Portugal and Netherlands likely the two worst results as far as those two nations, either of them winning the World Cup. However, TG saying they're pretty good on the big boys. So Argentina, right. France, Spain, a couple of the shorter shots there, which is good news for the books. What I'm anxious to see, Dave, and again, a reminder for people that have bet through the group stage, when you are playing these knockout round matches, if you're playing the money lines, that's just in regulation. And if those two teams are tied after the 90 minutes and stoppage time, there are those two extra 15-minute periods to decide it before they would have to go to penalty kicks. So those money lines would not be paid out as winners. You want to shift. If you think a team moves on, you want to play them to qualify or advance. And again, those prices are going to be far different than just the regulation money line plays. So just want to get that back out there for people who have just tuned us in. Different way to bet the knockout round, Dave, versus what people have been doing in the group stage.
You mentioned, I believe your ticket is 35-1 on Team USA. There are stages. Obviously, you can bet those stages of elimination for Team US of A. Again, Spain has drifted a little bit to 7-1. Might have to play them here if you can get by Bosnia and Herzegovina. Jensen, have you thought about when and where you might want to monetize that ticket?
No, and I don't think we need to until probably the quarterfinal round. As we look at where the bracket is, and we're in really good shape as far as how we've positioned our portfolio here. I am anxious to see this Netherlands-Morocco match later tonight. We will get one of our futures through. We have a Netherlands 14-1, a Morocco 60-1. That has the feel of a quarterfinal match because of how evenly I think each side is and how their attack will be against each other. So that at 9 p.m. final match of the three that we'll have today. So very interested in that result. And they will be a decided favorite against Canada, who get by South Africa 1-0 yesterday. So I like both those sides, not only whoever gets through, but also to qualify into that quarterfinal round as well.
And we're going to catch up with Jack Collins here in just a little bit in this hour, get Jack's expertise as well, see what he likes here as we are now into the knockout round here of the World Cup. Big shakeups continue here for the Charlotte Hornets. And so Miles Bridges, he has been moved on to the Phoenix Suns here. So point guard's gone, get rid of a forward here. And all of a sudden for a team that I think a lot of people look at and say, boy, I kind of like this team, at least the direction that they're heading. Jensen, they are not standing pat with the roster they had a year ago. It's going to look very different for Charlotte this year. Their odds did dip a little bit after the ball news last week from 90-1 to 100-1. So still they were extreme long shot anyway. But I wonder, with these moves, do you think they are actually getting better, even though the market's going against them?
Remarkable to see. They've been very busy, right? And again, also bringing in Coby White on the 3-year, $74 million deal too. That's something that is going to be huge for their backcourt. Remember, this is a team that went from 19 wins to 44 wins just this last year, year over year. And they were, 11-23. Just reading the article here, that 11-23 on January 2nd, but they won 32 of their next 45. And we're one of the top ranked offenses, of course, headed into that postseason. A lot of them thought they could win that playoff or that play in and then really be a headache for the Detroit Pistons. That did not end up being something that transpired. But I would say that this group feels, even with the LaMelo Ball trade, that they have a lot of momentum. Con Knipple, one of the foundational points moving forward, still knowing you've got a young core that they're going to believe in for years to come.
Yeah, it's interesting, these moves. And again, we'll see how it plays out. 100-1 right now to win the NBA title, 30-1 to win the Eastern Conference. So did they get better? The market says they did not. The Red Sox have gotten better over the last 4 days here. A sweep of the Yankees here, their arch rivals, hated rivals, and to do it in the fashion in which they did yesterday, kind of lost the game, then won the game, had it won, lost it, and then they win it again in extra innings, 5-4 there. Terrible bet, terrible beat, for under bettors yesterday. That is an under bet that's going to cash 99 out of 100 times, and it doesn't here, Jensen. But the bigger picture here is that the Red Sox feel like they might be getting off the deck a little bit right now.
Yeah, a bad beat of the major league season last night, and it's not even close for under eight bettors. One of the worst defeats in the history of the betting angles that you've had in this sport. What is critical, and you mentioned it, is the four-game sweep has now kind of catapulted the Boston Red Sox into a much better position in the wild card race. They now just 4.5 back of the Seattle Mariners, who dropped 2 out of 3 to the Cleveland Guardians over the weekend. This is still an American League that's very, very jumbled, Dave. If you look at where Boston is right now, it is 7 teams within 4.5 games of each other between Seattle and Boston for that final wild card spot. And Seattle trailing Cleveland just by 2.5 for that number 5 spot. More importantly, too, think about this. Speaking of tightening races, the Philadelphia Phillies are on one right now, man. Winners of 7 of the last 10. They take care of the New York Mets, and they now just 3 games back of the Atlanta Braves. Remember, Atlanta had run away and hid for a little bit, but they have dealt with their fair share of injuries. They're trying to hold off what has felt like the ensuing storm. And don't look now, Dave, but you're fighting fish. The Miami Marlins continue to be one of the great stories, 18-5 in their last 23, just six games behind the Atlanta Braves. They are winners of eight of their last 10. They do end up losing to St. Louis yesterday, but they're a team I know you've got a nice futures ticket on. That's a club I think that's for real here moving forward.
I'm kind of like Good Luck Chuck when it comes to most wins in a month. I had them last month to have the most wins. They might have the most wins this month in the month of June at this rate. Let's talk a little bit about Wimbledon because, again, I asked Zachary Cohen. I'll ask Zach again when he joins the program a little bit later on today. You know, you could have got Serena Williams about 30-1 to win Wimbledon, 60-1. All of a sudden, it feels like people believed. And then they don't believe anymore. She's going to make her debut again, or re-debut, if you will, tomorrow in singles. Yeah, Serena is going to be back, but we get it. Sabalenka, Sinner, they are the favorites on the men's and women's side to get it done on the grass at Wimbledon.
Yeah, no real feel on anything early. And again, I'll finally have a little rooting interest with the big three-leg futures parlay. Yannick Sinner to win the men's side, Rory McIlroy to win the Open, and the LA Dodgers to win the World Series, playing that at 39-1 with a nice little bonus bet. One of the, if it does hit, Dave, as you said, one of the great cross-sport parlays of a generation. And so excited to see where these next couple of weeks go on the grass. No Carlos Alcaraz for Yannick Sinner to have to get through there. So a decided favorite on the men's draw, minus $1.75, as you said. Excited to hear what Zachary Cohen has to say later. Gil Alexander, team no sleep the next couple of weeks. We'll hear what his plays are on a numbers game. So a lot to like here on the network for the next couple of weeks.
We do have some Americans that are making their way up the board here. Ben Shelton is 15-1. Taylor Fritz is 16-1. So it's been a minute since good old US of A over there at the All England Club. Let's see if our boys can make some noise here as we get ready for the 4th of July next week. And all right, when we come back, let's get back to the pitch here. And again, Jack Collins is going to join us a little bit later on this hour as well. Take a look at some of those matches today and see if there's any actionable spots. The Daily Docket is next. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
How about this to get you primed on a Monday morning, Jensen Lewis? $30 million in guaranteed prizes. Yes, right now, that's if you cash in this football season in Las Vegas with three Circa Sports contests. Each one is $1,000, all with no rake. That means every dollar stays in the prize pool here. So Circa Million that me and Jensen are in. 18 weeks, 128 ways to win, Jensen. We're going to be involved in a couple of those ways to win. That's for sure. This year, Circa Survivor, again, you pick one winner each week. Last one standing is going to scoop that pot. And how about Circa Grandissimo? Now, this is the high rollers. $100,000 per entry for that one. Jensen and I have made a claim that when we win millions, we will then be in Grandissimo the following year. You got to enter in Nevada, play from anywhere in the United States. $30 million guaranteed. Please visit circasports.com. For all of the details. I mentioned we're going to have Jack Collins on here in the very next segment, talk all things World Cup. We'll get into that as well. But also, apparently, we've got a call out that has happened here at the network that you and I are not privy to. We'll get to all of that right now in today's edition of the Daily Docket.
Your snapshot of odds, trends, and futures. This is the Daily Docket.
All right, Jensen, we're adults. We can handle criticism, and certainly when it's warranted, that's for sure. We appreciate everybody that gets at us on social media. We enjoy the engagement. Now, apparently on the network, and I've tried to get some information from our esteemed producer, Joe Friso, he will not budge. All he has said is, you guys got to hear this. It comes from our buddies, Matt Brown and Mike Somich. Let's hear what they had to say on Ready, Set, Bet.
I like this here. Colin says that we would be a dynamic tag team. What the finishing move would be. Yours is a built-in. I mean, the Samo Bomb, obviously, would be the, yeah. I mean, yours is built-in. I don't know what my finishing
literally
move would
be. The nickname came from freshman wrestling. So it actually is a finishing move that we've got. That is a good point. We are probably the only show with a finishing wrestling move as well.
Yeah.
Matt Brown, not a great finishing wrestling move name.
No, I don't know what my move would be. I would want it to be really cool though. I wouldn't want to do like the, you know, like some do, they do like the fake rear naked chokes or whatever, or like the fake, ankle locks and stuff. And it's like, come on, you're not really doing that to that person. So I don't know. I'd have to figure it out. Though he does say, don't agree with you here, Colin, saying that Dave Ross and Jensen would give us a run for our money. We would finish that matchup inside of 5 minutes. Like we're finishing that matchup inside of five.
I'm going to say the longer that goes, the better for us too. Like, I think that we might have a slight stamina edge there. Although that is a Marine and a former Major League Baseball player.
But we're in a different weight class. Good, right? Aren't we? We're in a
pretty good lineup.
We're probably in a different weight class than those guys too. So, you know, they'd have to step up and they'd have to step up in class to come try to take our belts. Yeah. To come try and get us.
We're both sneaky tall. Like you don't see that when you're watching on TV, but we're both up there above 6 feet. So
that is fantastic from that.
Oh my God.
Okay. It's true about the height. I am height challenged. Right. So like in a matchup, if it's a tag team matchup, first of all, like, what's the attire? Are we in masks? How is this? Is this like WWE wrestling style? We got to tag in and tag out. Because if it's two on two, that'd be interesting. Jensen, you're going to be the biggest guy inside that octagon and or squared circle, right? I'm clearly going to be the smallest guy. And yes, I'm not as young as I used to be, but scrappy, man. I'm very tenacious. And, you know, my Marine Corps ways are going to say all it needs to be said there. How do we handicap that? Like, how do we attack that in a tag team matchup against Matt and Mike?
Well, first of all, I appreciate the boys and all's fair in love and war. So well done from Colin Murphy for just throwing it out there. Is Matt Brown 6 feet tall? I've never met him in person, so I don't know, you know, where he's at. Somich feels long and lanky. But I would say for me, it's 6'3", 245. Let me extend them the video of me taking on the craziest guy in Major League Baseball and Adrian Beltre. And if you want this smoke, then I think Dana White, friend of the program, would be happy to put us in the octagon. This is when you know you're on top and you have the challengers. Dave, you can attest to this, right? You know, it's like the UFC, the challenger, when they win and Joe Rogan comes in to interview him. And it's like those guys taking the mic and they want to call out their guy. Hey, come to the top of the mountain, man. It's lonely up here. Inside of 5 minutes, oof. Whew. Matt, you might live to regret that one, pal. That will not end well for you, my friend. Sorry to say.
The Samo Bomb is a real thing, because I remember asking Mike about that years ago. Apparently, that was his finishing move, as you alluded to, in high school. Fantastic nickname, by the way. We do need to come up with Matt's finishing move. I don't know what it would be, Matt, but I'd be very curious. And yes, I'd have to come up and wait. There's no doubt, because those guys are going to be bigger. But, the bigger they are, the harder they fall, Jensen. I've got no problem with that.
Would it be?
I don't know about the other teams out there in the shows, but that would be a very interesting matchup.
Would it be the ground and brown? Would he be like a guy that gets you down to the mat? Is it the ground and brown for him? The Samo Bomb's great. I mean, it is what it is. That's outstanding. But Dana White, if you're listening, and we know he does from time to time, if you want to book that, are we a $5 favorite in that matchup? I think it's pretty decided.
I know Matt, I know Matt dabbled in MMA, so I don't know, but I like the ground game that you gave him there. I think that's a good nickname, maybe the Brown and the Ground and Brown right there. So
Ground and Brown from Matt Brown. There you go.
There it is. See, Matt, we're already working to get you a nickname there for this big featured match. We do have a lot to get to. By the way, we love those guys. They're a ton of fun. It's a great show on the weekend. Please check it out. Ready, Set, Bet. It's absolutely fantastic. Let's get to the World Cup. And again, we're going to have Jack Collins join us in the very next segment to talk all things and break this down. But you've got some interesting tickets out there. Brazil is one of those teams you do have a ticket on. They're going to take on Japan here in the knockout phase. There's always danger, right? There's always danger of an upset here. But you have to like where you stand, I think, on the Brazil side today, correct?
Yeah, and again, just a reminder, Dave, if you are thinking that Brazil is going to be the team that moves on, they right now just short of a $3 favorite to qualify or advance. And again, that's regardless if it takes 90 minutes, if you have to go into the extra 15-minute periods, or dear God, if it gets to penalty kicks, that's how that bet is graded. If you think it ends before the extra time, then you can go ahead and play the money line. I would anticipate, and looking at kind of where stylistically you have, it's the elite talent up top for Brazil. And knowing that their attack is excellent, they're strong defensively. They create a lot of high quality chances. Of course, the tournament pedigree is what it is. I'd be shocked if they don't somehow advance here. But Japan, very compact and technical. They're dangerous on the transition. So you got to watch the counter if Brazil is putting numbers forward a little too quickly or a little too aggressively. That could be kind of where you look at. This feels like a 2-1 Brazil win here, and to move forward, I would think both teams to score is a nice little value here if you want to look at it that way, just knowing the pedigree of both sides. But I would have to say Brazil ends up qualifying, advancing into the round of 16.
I think maybe the opinion of Team USA has changed the most here since the beginning of this World Cup to where we are now here, getting to the knockout stage. But what about Brazil's? Because I felt like they were not the team that we were talking about. We're talking all about the big boys, whether Argentina can go back-to-back, certainly France and Spain up there in the odds market. I did not feel like there was a lot of buzz around Brazil, and now they've been shortened down here to 12-1 in the futures market. Jensen, have you seen enough out of them to say not only can they and should win and beat Japan today, but truly viable here to make that ultimate deep run?
Yeah, that's kind of where I went. And just knowing where my futures portfolio was allocated, I wanted an opportunity to kind of move forward in a couple of different ways. I do have a Norway 30-1 future. They take on Ivory Coast. And so my thought process was, if Brazil gets through, I would anticipate Erling Haaland and company with Norway can advance, then I at least get one of those into the corner final round. And that was a lot of the handicap for me there. Brazil started slow, but I think they've kind of found their form here late, and that's always a great time to do it. A lot of momentum headed in, but that'll be one of the great matchups today, and excited to see where that one transpires.
Germany and Paraguay going to be at Gillette Stadium later on this afternoon, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. Then the Netherlands and Morocco will be in Guadalajara, 9 p.m. Eastern. Jensen, any quick takes on those two matches before we have Jack in the next segment?
Well, I feel like that Germany, if you want to play an alternate side or an alternate spread, Germany -1, just to keep you from, looking at maybe a potential back ender there from Paraguay. And then Netherlands, Morocco, man, this feels like a quarterfinal matchup. I think you could see the draw in regulation or a lower scoring affair. Both are well organized and capable of making this one. As our friends across the pond would say, Dave, very cagey, a cagey affair between the Netherlands and Morocco later tonight.
And just a shout out to Mike and Matt on Ready, Set, Bet. I did join the Marine Corps because I wanted to be in the boxing team. Those plans did not work out. Jack Collins joins the program next. VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We continue VSiN by the Books on this Monday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen was here with you. We've really enjoyed our conversations with Jack Collins, talking all things World Cup here over the course of the last couple of weeks. A lot more to get to here in this FIBA World Cup. Joins us now here as the host on SiriusXM FC. Joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Getting ready to make the big pilgrimage over the big pond here to Miami. About five short days, Jack. Are you ready to acclimate to the United States when you get here?
I'm so ready. Like, I'm effectively already nocturnal, right, because of all these games. So I'm already on the five-hour time difference. And it's been so hot in London over the last sort of week or so that I'm assuming it's not going to be much hotter in Miami. So I think we're ready. I'm just excited at this point, boys. Really, really excited.
1:30 in the afternoon where you are, my friend. But the sun will be shining on this knockout stage. Already the theater of the absurd yesterday, watching how that match between South Africa and Canada ends up transpiring. Canada through for the first time to the round of 16 in their country's history. Where do we stand now? And before we dive into the slate today, kind of your thoughts on how the knockout bracket ended up being finalized. Were there any teams that maybe drew a little bit worse or better as far as their pathways, maybe to the semifinals, if not the final?
Yeah, I think that Portugal are probably the one you look at. They would have been expected to win that group. Colombia are a good opponent, a strong opponent. But I think that the kind of feeling around Portugal, and you know, I spend a lot of time there, was that this was a group to be won. And now they find themselves on the same side of the bracket as Spain, who they might end up meeting in a round of 16 game. That is not ideal if you're a Portugal side still trying to find your way into this tournament, still trying to work out the kinks, I think, in how this team all fits together. So they're the big kind of blow up in terms of a team that's got through, but not necessarily in the position that they would have wanted to. And I think that, you know, aside from that, the bracket looks quite... It would have been even, very, very even, had Portugal won their group, and there would have been five of the top 10 and on one side and five of the top 10 in the FIFA rankings on the other, which is kind of how it was supposed to go. Now, that other side of the bracket looks a little bit softer, I think, and Argentina, potentially the main beneficiaries, who might not run into, you know, another sort of top 6-7 nation until they get to the semi-finals, really, although it does throw up the idea of this really, really tasty all-Latin affair between Argentina and Colombia in the quarterfinals, which would be a rerun of the Copa America final the last time out. So look, swings and roundabouts, you've got to beat big teams if you want to win the tournament. But I think Portugal will probably be the most disappointed in terms of where they've got to in their group.
Yeah, and you see Argentina, big money mover here. They were 10-1 here before the tournament began, all the way down now to the second betting choice at 4-1, Jack. You know, one team, and I brought this up with Jensen about Brazil. They're getting ready to take on Japan today in the first three matches, and they've been shorted now down to 12-1. And I felt like before the tournament, not a whole lot of talk and buzz around this Brazilian team. What do you make of them now as they've advanced here to the knockout stage?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're working it out slowly and surely. This is very much not the most talented Brazilian side we've seen in some time. And Carlo Ancelotti has been brought in, you know, one of the great managers of the game, to come in there and effectively try to turn this round. Now, his specialty was knockout football, right? He went through with a Real Madrid team and won the Champions League on a number of occasions, even when Real Madrid didn't feel like the best or the most cohesive side. Now, there's an element of that that rings true, because they are a team that really does kind of come to life in the knockout stages of the Champions League. They feel like they own that competition, in inverted commas, in a similar way to, I would imagine, the Brazilian feel around the World Cup. This is our competition. It doesn't feel like a World Cup has begun until you see those canary yellow Brazil shirts out on the pitch. I was skeptical about Brazil's chances. And in fact, the last time I was with you two, I made a point that I thought that Scotland would be able to kind of shuffle up the middle and make it very, very difficult for Brazil to play. Now, Scotland ruined that by effectively shooting themselves in the foot twice in the first 10 minutes. And, you know, the game never got the chance to play out as it might have done. But I think that what was notable in that game and in Brazil's kind of other games that we've seen is that they are getting much better off the ball. And that was something that there were serious question marks about it. I still think they're a long shot to win this competition. And I think today's game against Japan is a really, really good test to see where Brazil are, because Japan are unbelievably technical, but they also press like demons from the front of the pitch. And whether Brazil can stand up to that physical and technical examination, I think will give us a much better idea of how we see Brazil going forward if they were to progress through this match. But I don't think that's a given.
I'm with you, and I think the counter is so imperative for Japan. Like, they can really get numbers forward if they want to put Brazil on their heels. I think that's a great idea if you're betting that side, knowing that Japan will have some of that tactical advantage too. It would feel maybe a little more one-sided, Germany and Paraguay. The second match of the day would feel like Germany dominates possession, creates some overload, maybe uses their width and knowing how they pass. Do we feel that Paraguay kind of defends deep, looks for transition themselves? How do you size up this match?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's very much how this plays out. And Germany have questions to answer themselves, right? Because whilst the group stage was ultimately a success and they won the group, the big game against Ecuador at the end, where Ecuador needed to get a result and Germany didn't, so you've got to take that into kind of account when you're discussing it. But also, I think that most of the questions about Germany were, do they have the cutting edge? Are they going to be able to put it all together in the final third? Are these star players, Musiala, Wirtz, for example, going to be able to shine at this tournament in the way that we kind of hope they could? The jury's still very much out on that, I think. And when you're kind of putting it in the context of how people in Germany are feeling about this and reading the press in Germany, it's quite interesting to see that no one's that convinced. You know, the TV pundits are criticizing this team. The manager is having to come out and, you know, defend himself at bat, which is quite intriguing in itself. I'd imagine, you know, that they have too much to go through here against Paraguay, who did improve, you know, over the course of the tournament. That first game against the US, and everyone was expecting it to be a really tough battle. We got to that game and it was kind of looking at it going, this isn't the Paraguay that I saw in the knock in the qualification process. You know, this isn't the Paraguay that no one had better results than in South America after Gustavo Alfaro took over. This is not the side that conceded only 10 goals in 18 games. I think we've seen a lot more of that Paraguay, a lot more of the kind of dark arts, common ball Paraguay in their final two games. And that's got them over the line. Germany will have to work very hard to break this team down and they will look to play on the count. But I think that Germany, with the options that they have coming off the bench, will have too much for Paraguay, even if there are still questions to answer about them going and winning the whole thing, I think.
Enjoying our conversation across the big pond with Jack Collins, host on SiriusXM FC. And we got one more match to get to here. Netherlands about 15-1 here to win the whole thing. Morocco, a little bit of a longer shot here. We can understand why the Netherlands are the favorite today. Could there be an upset in the making here, Jack?
Yeah, I think that this and the Japan-Brazil game both have maybe not upset watch all over them, but maybe high-scoring draw. I think that there might be a lot of goals in these two games in particular. And I think the thing is that Morocco were obviously semi-finalists 4 years ago in Qatar. I think this is a better Morocco team than it was 4 years ago. I think it's more rounded. I think it has more kind of spark up front. We have really not seen them, you know, go to bat for 90 minutes in any game thus far. They played brilliantly for the first 20 against Brazil. They ended up drawing that game 1-1. They played brilliantly for the first 20 minutes against Scotland. They ended up winning that game. And then against Haiti, they got a real scare as they rotated a little bit in that final day. They got over the line in the end. But the other thing with that to think about is that in Qatar, Morocco started the tournament a little bit slowly, but they went hell for leather from the first moment. And I mean that slowly in terms of the results rather than the performances. And by the time they got to the semi-final against France, they had three or four key players missing. I think Mazraoui went off at halftime. They were missing a load of players by that point. And the coach said, Walid Regragui at the time, we're playing with everyone about 60, 70%. I wonder if Morocco are learning from their experiences, not necessarily pushing the accelerator down as much as they did in those opening stages because they know that they have the quality to deal with it. So I think this is a really good game. I tell you what, there might be one place to watch this in the world that's not at the stadium, which would be the best, which is Rotterdam. Huge immigrant Moroccan population. The two nations have links that go as far back as sort of the 60s, the 50s. And also, there's a lot of players who were available to represent both of these nations. I think six of the Morocco squad were actually born in the Netherlands. So there's a lot riding on this. And we had a little bit of it with Belgium last time out, where there's also quite a large Moroccan population. But I think that this one looks really, really exciting on paper. I'm expecting goals. I'm expecting a little bit of an end-to-end encounter. And I'm hopeful that Morocco will be able to kind of up the ante from what we've seen from them in the group stages and kind of move forward with it. So yeah, I think this is maybe the game of the day.
I agree. Jack, last 30 seconds with you. Just off the top of your head, sneaky squad to maybe find their way, whether it be upset or not, to find their way to the quarterfinal with the way that the bracket has kind of drawn thus far.
Yeah, I think Colombia, right, who obviously won that group, do feel like they're getting into this in a really, really strong way. I think the US have a very strong chance of reaching a quarterfinal here. Obviously, there are going to be tests to come. But the team that I've loved watching perhaps the most, and the one that I've just got a bit of a sneaky feeling about, is the Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire, who have this incredible amount of talent, a very good defensive record in qualification. They came third in their group. So it's obviously kind of one of those. They came second in their group. So it's obviously not quite as obvious as you might think, but I think they are getting to a point here where it's all starting to click together. They're starting to move in the right way, and I think it might fall out quite nicely if they were to get through Norway, which feels like a really, really good game as well.
Jack, fantastic stuff, man. Safe travels. Get on that big bird. Come on over here to the United States. We're excited to have you, my man, when you get down there to Miami. We will catch up again soon as this riveting World Cup continues. When we come back, we're going to talk some American football here. The countdown to Canton, Ohio continues next. Beason by the Books. NFL betting guide is out right now, Jensen Lewis. And whether you're going to bet those futures, we know you are in the NFL. Win totals, divisional races, MVP, rookie of the year. The Super Bowl odds are all out there for you when you get our new football special. It's just $175 right now when you get it. So breakdowns of all 32 teams here in the NFL, projected win totals, and all those best bets from all of our analysts and all of our guests. So the sooner you sign up, the more value you will get from said guide. That includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings, Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. All you got to do is go over to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That is VSiN.com/subscribe. We're getting closer and closer. I mean, it's going to be July at the end of this week, if you can believe it. And then the Hall of Fame game is going to be here before you know it. We're continuing our countdown here of every single team in the NFL before we get to that Hall of Fame game. And maybe the team that people would suspect, well, they're the short favorites right now to win the Super Bowl plus 550, it's the LA Rams. And again, something I mentioned when we saw, obviously, the Myles Garrett trade, Matt Stafford's coming back, Sean McVay, we're getting the rest of the band together, and then you're adding a guy like Myles Garrett, you could understand why the number has been dramatically on the move. Before we really break them down critically, just from an overview, when you see that everybody else is double digits, and then there are the Rams at 5-1, Jensen, is that too much of a course correction for you?
Not necessarily. And I can understand why they are as short as they are, and even shorter now with the Myles Garrett acquisition. Remember back when we got the news that it was the trade with the Kansas City Chiefs, right, to get Trent McDuffie, and then they signed Jalen Watson as well. So it was a pretty big compliment to the back end and that secondary. I think they even got Cam Curl back, right? If they re-signed him, I think that also happened as well. Tyler Higbee, they re-signed, of course, key tight end for them on the other side. This all began, you know, when we went to draft day and saw the trade with the Falcons, and it's Ty Simpson, the quarterback, and they're like, what? Whoa, what did we miss there? Did not even see it coming. They did really do a great job, though. Round two, getting Max Clare from The Ohio State here, a really, really key part of their, what they love running that 13 personnel, right? So it made sense to see why you would want to add yet another guy to Higbee, to Parkinson, that would fill out that tight end room. Keegan Trost, the offensive tackle from Missouri, was one of the highest graded offensive tackles in the class. Obviously, we know protecting Matthew Stafford and continuing to provide holes there for that run game will be great. I think the move to your earlier question, is it too much of a course correction? No, and Dave, I would even ask you, how much more did Seattle, they're the defending champs, right? Everyone's got to go through them. What was the daylight in your eyes for the Rams and the Seahawks, even before the Seattle Seahawks went to the Super Bowl and won it? It didn't feel like there was much, if any. If anything, it feels like the Rams have eradicated whatever daylight was there, if not moved ahead on paper. So would you agree with that? You know, now even with the Myles Garrett acquisition, it feels like there wasn't a lot of ground for them to make up, if any. And now it feels like they're ahead of them, at least on paper, to start the season.
Yeah, this feels like Les Snead, you mentioned going out and really kind of redoing your corners and fortifying that position. Remember when they made their Super Bowl run not that long ago, it was Jalen Ramsey that they brought in that was a key acquisition. They seem to do this like, let's go to the corner spot and let's address this and clear up our defense. Because the offense, I don't think we have a whole lot of questions about the offense. As long as Matthew Stafford can stay upright and that back is okay. This was a fade team for me a year ago, and I paid dearly because of it, because I thought Matthew Stafford was not going to, one, I didn't know if he was going to play, and two, was he going to hold up? Well, then he goes on, he's the MVP, right? So it's like you get that, then you add the defensive player of the year and a guy like Myles Garrett, and you see why these numbers get so shorted. So I'm with you. I understand why they are plus 550. I get that. It makes sense to me. I don't want to bet it at that number, but it does make sense. I think it's, quote-unquote, a fair price in the marketplace. Again, not one that I would wager on today, because I'd like to see there's going to be stumbling blocks in a season like this and in a division like this. And opening up on the road, we'll find out against San Francisco if they are who we think they are and if they just get off to this ridiculous start, maybe that number gets even shorter. But, Jensen, short of that, I think you might have the opportunity to wait and see if they don't look like this juggernaut team that everybody's expecting. Is Myles Garrett, I mean, clearly in Cleveland, he's still, he looks like the best defensive edge rusher in the game. It's hard to debate that, but is it going to look the same in LA? We assume it will, but there's a problem when you assume. Is Aaron Donald coming back? And those whispers out there, is that move? I wonder if Aaron Donald does in fact come back and put him in the middle with Myles Garrett on the outside, does that number get even shorter? You would think it would with the hype, but then again, a guy coming out of retirement potentially. But what I'm getting at is they felt like they needed to shore up the defense, and they've done that. So with all the focus on the quarterback, all the focus on high-powered and Sean McVay and his offensive scheme, and he's a boy genius, and he is all of those things, it really is the defense that they feel like they focused on to get better. Because what could they not get in Seattle in the championship game when they needed it? A stop. That's really what it came down to. They score all day, right? We can go up and down the field on you, but we couldn't get a stop. And I feel like that's what Les Snead and that's what Sean McVay have spent this offseason working on. Now, again, Jensen, I'm not ready to just sit here, and I'm sure Seattle isn't either, nor the Niners, to go, let's just pass a baton. It's on to the next in the NFC West, and we're all going to, you know, bow down here to the new kings in the Rams. That's not going to happen, obviously. So those numbers, plus 290 to win the conference, you got to get out of the division first. And my point is they were very good last year. They were maybe as good as Seattle in those games. Go back and watch those. But home field did matter in the end. And Jensen, if it really is going to be a three-horse race down the stretch, why would I play those short numbers today if I'm not 1,000% convinced that they're absolutely the best team in that division? I think they are the better team right now, but the clear-cut best team over the reigning defendings and over San Francisco, I'm not ready to go there yet.
Okay, so the schedule ends up providing some context as far as where you'd want to jump in on the future side. They do not play the Seahawks until Christmas Day. And they will play Seattle two of the final 3 weeks of the regular season. You mentioned they'll go down under to take on the Niners in the opener. Just food for thought there, and a great reason to get our NFL betting guide at VSiN.com. Underdogs 12-3 ATS in the Rams 49ers series head to head since 2019. And so something to sink your teeth in there. They will get a little bit of an extended break from the 10th there of September to the 21st. When they will host the New York Football Giants. Giants have actually won the last five ATS when visiting the Rams. So interesting little ATS spot, fading the Rams in the first two games of this regular season by virtue of those trends. Dave, I've asked you this a few times now in the few teams that we've already broken down. Where would you put the Rams in your survivor echelon? They got the fifth toughest schedule on paper as far as opponent winning percentage. And it's a gauntlet to start. Niners in Australia. Then you got to go to Mile High in week three against the Broncos, into Philadelphia a week later in week four. And then you host the Bills at home. So this is no cakewalk for the Rams the first 5 weeks of the season. They do go to Arizona on October 18th. So maybe if you're looking for a road team, because they don't play the Cardinals until the middle of November, and they are 10-1 ATS in their last 11 against Arizona. But where survivor-wise would you want to kind of map out where you'd use the Rams? I think it's an interesting scheduling spot for where you'd want to do it.
I mean, potentially week six at home against the Cardinals, if we are looking at them as potentially one of the worst teams in the league. But you mentioned the gauntlet to run it here, right? Coming out of the gates against San Francisco, then the Giants on a Monday night in primetime, Sean Payton and the Broncos, the Eagle game, which might have actually ended up costing them a Super Bowl last year, at least cost them home field, that's for sure. And then the Bills on Monday Night Football. I mean, that's a tough one. And my point is on this, look, I'm not discarding the Rams as being the short shot to win the Super Bowl. I understand it. But just wait, people. Have the patience of Job. I mean, what are they going to do coming out of this gate here? Are they going to be 4-1? Okay, then maybe the number gets shorter. But if they're 3-2, dare I say 2-3, you would think theoretically you'd get a much better number with a really tough schedule. It looks like it gets easier in that middle portion there with those two matchups there against the Cardinals. You got the Commanders. We'll find out what they're going to look like this year. Chargers will be a tough one, of course, with no real home field advantage either way. You would think that'd be a home field for the Rams. And earlier against the Raiders, and we don't know what the Raiders are going to look like. Maybe they look better early. We're not quite sure. So it gets easier for them, but I'd wait. Let's see what this team looks like coming out of the gate. If they look like the juggernaut that we're all expecting, then maybe the number gets a little shorter, but it won't be dramatically shorter. So wait on that. Don't play the 550 now, people. Wait on the Rams. They get off to a slow start. You still believe in them. They don't have injuries. Maybe you hop on them at, say, 6-7-1, and you'll get a better number as time goes on. We can't wait for football here at VSiN. Again, become a VSiN Pro subscriber. It is By the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.